Welcome to the Science of Psychotherapy podcast with your hosts, Richard Hill and Matthew Darlitz.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Science of Psychotherapy podcast. My name is Matthew Darlitz, Editor-in-Chief of the Science of Psychotherapy, and as always here with Managing Editor Richard Hill. Hi, Richard.
Howdy doody, Matt. Look, I haven't seen you for almost not terribly long. Sure. So it's great. It's great to see you again. We're kind of busy at the moment, so it tends to be a week or so before we see each other. But so it's great. Yeah. You're looking terribly young.
No. Awake. I'm just happy to be awake.
Happy to be awake. Now, who are we seeing today?
We are going across to the Netherlands, and we're going to meet Jos van Boxtel. Now, I don't know if that's how you pronounce it in Dutch, but that's my best attempt.
Well, it's and a good, he good is Aussie a, version, yeah.
It's a good Aussie version. So Jos is a hypnotherapist and EMDR therapist, and he's been coaching and training since 2004. And he's written a book, which we will be the focus of our conversation today, with Stephen Brooks. Richard, you're going to put us in the picture here.
Yeah, this is really sort of my area, and I suppose this Ericksonian type of framework that for those who are in it, it's like, yeah, but it almost feels like a bit of a what are you talking about when we get there? So Stephen Brooks is English. He actually brought spread the sense of the teaching of Ericksonian hypnosis starting in the 80s and 90s. Erikson died in 1980. Now Erikson was this brilliant psychiatrist who worked a lot with hypnotherapy, and so from he was 80 when he died in, or 79 when he died in 1980. So right through the century, developing all kinds of different approaches, a lot of scientific frameworks. So he was a great inspiration, and it was the people who took it on and moved forward with it. So in America, you've got Jeff Zweig, people like Stephen Gilligan, Bill O'Hanlon. We've got in Australia, we've got Rob McNeely, who's carried on his stuff. I'm a second generation because Ernest Rossi was his principal compatriot and colleague, and then I'm with Ernie. So Stephen is somebody who has developed this work, but he's brought into it. And as Erikson said, bring your own stuff in, be your own frame. And he's brought in his framework of Buddhism and being a Buddhist, and then those natures, things of compassion, which are very popular as we're talking about today. So Jos has become a chronicler of what Stephen does. So he's looked at therapies and he's looked at work and talked. And so he's kind of been the writer of Stephen's work. And I think we'll find this very interesting.
Okay, brilliant. And we'll definitely leave links in the show notes so you can go and check out Stephen Brooks if you're not familiar with him as well.
And, of course, Jos van Boxtel, albeit they'll be probably pronouncing it terribly.
That's right. Okay, Richard, let's jump across to the Netherlands and have this conversation. Jos, welcome to the Science of Psychotherapy podcast. It's so great to have you with us.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here.
Yes, and I'm here, of course, too. Jos, I'm so excited to finally sort of catch up into the same space with you. We've been doing emails and various things, and our mutual admiration of Stephen Brooks, which is what we'll talk about in a moment. But it's always thrilling to catch up with people. I can actually see you at the moment, but of course we're on podcast, yeah. So that's not the case for everybody else. But you're looking terrific.
Thank you.
Jos, we've given our listeners just a little bit of a bio, but I'm wondering if you can just give us a little bit more about your background, just to put us in the picture, so to speak.
Yeah, absolutely. I have a background originally in physics. I studied physics when I was young. And I switched to therapy and psychology later on in life, and mainly focused on hypnotherapy and NLP. So I studied Milton Erickson's work pretty intensely, and Stephen Brooks's work, obviously, that's the one we're talking about. And I developed my practice over the years, so I've been running my practice for the last 15, 16 years here in the Netherlands. So that's in a nutshell who I am and where I came from.
Now, do you have a lot of international people coming to do your workshops there in the Netherlands?
Yeah, some of them. Yeah. Some people come from the Netherlands. Some people come from all over the world doing my workshops here. So enjoy that very much.
That's beautiful. Now, what is interesting, we've got your work. So I want to look at your personal work. But it's what's drawn us is, of course, this book, which has been a little while coming, which is your authoring of work done by Stephen Brooks, who, for those who don't know Stephen Brooks, we talked about Stephen in many situations, but he was really instrumental in bringing Ericksonian and promoting Ericksonian hypnosis in the UK.
Yes, absolutely.
And he developed schools and did a lot of work. He's now living in Thailand, I believe.
Thailand, yeah, that's it. Yeah.
And so that's kind of handy. So when he says come, I have to go far, but it's the beautiful work that he's been doing in the last few years is certainly taking on a Buddhist type of framework. Certainly personally, he's moved very much towards there, but his work has absorbed that and he's been embracing and engaging the nature of compassion.
Right.
So I guess I've got to the point of the title of your book, Volume 1, Phobias, Stephen Brooks and the Art of Compassionate Ericksonian Hypnotherapy.
Right.
What was the way in which you and Stephen brought this book together into the form that you eventually created?
Yes, good question. I studied Stephen's work I've been studying his work for a long time. And part of that was his work from the 80s and the 90s, which was very much Ericksonian-based, Ericksonian hypnotherapy. And he has a real treasure trove of case studies, of video-recorded sessions that he did at that time, which I all studied very intensely and very minutely to learn from that. And I decided that I had to write about it. The one problem with Stephen Brooks is that he's never written a book on his work. And his style of doing Ericksonian hypnotherapy is very much like Erickson in one sense, using indirect suggestion, using implication, the concept of utilization, of course. And he kind of brought that to modern times, combining it with Eastern philosophies, and particularly Buddhist philosophy based on non-attachment and compassion. And this I found brilliant and very appealing. And much of his work I've started putting into my own work and taking that in and integrating that with my own style of doing therapy. So I felt a need to write about that and to bring that to the world.
Yes, so you've been very much his voice to the world, really.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Now, of course, it is impossible for me not to not only notice but passionately feel the complete parallel between a strong parallel between what you're doing with Stephen and what Ernest Rossi did with Milton Erickson.
Yeah.
Because all those books in the 70s. That came out, Hypnotic Realities and The February Man, so on and so forth, they were largely authored by Rossi.
Yes.
And he would go back and he would discuss them with Erickson and they would resolve it. And it was at that stage of Erickson's career, it was not his desire to write books. He was also, crippled with the polio,
right.
Re-emergent polio and so on and so forth. Now, I've seen Stephen. He's pretty much not crippled.
No,
he's pretty vibrant and active.
Yeah.
But what it is it's a part of the. I'm feeling it's a part of the compassion. He prefers to form engagements. Correctly sensitive there? He prefers to work in a collaborative, integrative way. Am I picking him up right there?
Yes, absolutely. He loves to work with people, including clients, obviously, and students, but also people he wants to work with. And I was lucky enough to become one of them. I've known him for 10 years now. I got to know him about 10 years ago and did his trainings and his online training and his workshops in London at the time and started to work together with him. So, which was a huge opportunity for me to really understand what he does, where he came from.
How about your trainings? You mentioned that there. Now, we'll talk a bit about the book and Stephen's work, but we want to celebrate you as well, because there's some very nice. Now, we'll give links in the show notes to your work of MindSpring and also the MindSpring training programs. Right. What's the way in which your own focus and your own process and what you've learned from Stephen, how do they interplay? What's the framework going on there?
Yes. Well, I came when I started my development as a therapist. I started off in body work, actually, in the United States. I did a training with Ilana Rubenfeld. She's one of the key figures in the United States in body mind and body work. And that's where I picked up my interest in therapy and healing people and helping people. During that training, I first heard about Erickson. I never heard about him before. And I was immediately intrigued by his person and his legacy and his brilliant way of working with clients. So from that point on, I started to study hypnotherapy, particularly Erickson's work. Discovered NLP, became an NLP trainer. And sort of during that time, I picked up a lot of approaches and techniques, being very keen on learning anything related to hypnotherapy. And Erickson was always there somehow, sometimes more at the foreground, sometimes more at the background. I kept on studying his work. His name showed up everywhere. And then at a certain point, I found this video in my cabinet, who had been there for quite a while. I bought it somewhere. I never watched it, which said indirect hypnosis. And I thought, well, let me watch that. And this was Stephen Brooks's one and only video he had actually published. And I was blown away. And I immediately looked him up on the internet, and thank God he was still around and he was giving courses. So that's how I found him, and he was someone who was close to me. He was in London. I live in the Netherlands, and was still around. Obviously, Erickson, of course, wasn't around anymore. So he was the guy for me to bring my Ericksonian knowledge and experience to the next level, and that's what I've been doing for the last 10 years. He has been a brilliant example in how to apply and to teach Ericksonian hypnosis.
Right. And there's probably another striking resemblance there between Richard, yourself, and Ernest.
Yeah. No, it is, Josh. It's so fascinating sitting here listening, because most people will be aware, but some might not, but dear Ernie passed away September 19th. And so now, as we found with Erickson, there's not that source to go to, so we go somewhere else. But this thing, you're working with physics early. Ernie was in pharmaceuticals and certainly physics and things. And even this thing, the body working. He worked with, was it Franz Alexander, I think, in his postdoctoral stuff, particularly because it was body work and body mind work. Mm-hmm. So this attraction and this sense of Erickson being a sort of an early generator of this, an early energizer of these ideas. I expect there are others around the world, but he certainly has maintained his frame. But this movement of Stephen's into the nature of compassionate, embracing those two things, which is really now my impression is that's been happening over the last 10 years, but most importantly over the last 4 or 5. And again, am I correct?
Well, I think he brought it in very early on. He's been a Buddhist As I know from the age of 14, as a youngster already.
I see. So, yes, yeah. I've misunderstood the frame. Yes, he's always. It hasn't been as obvious. Beautiful. Please tell us some more.
He's been a Buddhist from the age of 14. So what I know from him, the Buddhist principles and non-attachment and compassion were with him even when he started to learn about hypnosis, when he first started about it. So he was very much an Ericksonian hypnotherapist, but I think in the background, this idea of compassion and non-attachment and Eastern philosophies in general was already there. And it wasn't until the 90s that he started really, I think, integrating it into his way of working with clients, resulting in his move to Thailand in the late 90s or somewhere around there, and starting to develop a therapeutic approach based on non-attachment and integrating that with hypnosis. That came from very early in his life, I guess.
Yeah, so I have to add a decade to my my impressions. That's
more or less.
Which is fine. I mean, the most recent fad, or not fad, it's incorrect to say, it's denigrating. The most recent sort of addition to mindfulness and development of that was with compassion. We talk about compassionate mindfulness now, and they're looking at various experiments and testings of things quite differently. So again, here we have Stephen quite ahead of his time, and I think that's what you bring out in particularly the first part of the book when you talk about his prescience. How did you address? Now, let's just go to the book, because the book is kind of in two parts, and just if you could maybe take a moment or two to describe the process of creating the book.
Yes, I started the book obviously after having studied this one case of Stevens, this one video recorded case of him treating a woman with a spider phobia. I picked this one because it was a very dramatic change in less than an hour. From someone having a very severe phobia to being it practically gone an hour later. At the same time, it was a beautiful demonstration of indirect hypnosis and indirect language patterns. There were so many forms of indirect suggestion and embedded commands and implication and linkings that I thought this is the one to start with and an opportunity to give an example of how quickly utilization and indirect suggestion can work, and at the same time describe all these layers of indirect suggestion and implication and types of utilization that a therapist can use. So that was the basis for writing this book.
And that second half of it, where you actually have a transcript, yes. As Erickson did with Rossi, you've annotated the types of language and you know, of course, you've done this in consultation with Stephen so beautifully. And it's these language patterns, these language styles, which I think as well, I talk about it a lot, of course, because language principles is a fundamental element of the work I do with Mirroring Hands.
Yeah.
But they're not language principles and language styles which are deliberately or in a programmed way placed on top. They're actually a framework of being that, yes, I think you bring that across, the framework of being. But first, as happens with musicians and actors and all the rest of it, but first you've got to learn the technique. First you've got to learn the elements. And that's what I think you've really tried to do here. I think you've done it very successfully.
One of the things I try to do is give people who read the book the scales, to put it that way, in musical terms. Of all the possible indirect ways of suggesting things. And then the second part is a very detailed description of how Stephen Brooks is using that and what choices he makes at every minute, even every second of the session. And it's, you're right in the sense that indirect language is a very important point, is not about telling or instructing the client what to think or to do or to change. It's a very open, vague frame of stimulating the unconscious of the person to to do something, to change, to heal. I think that the absolute power of indirect hypnosis is not to provide a solution or provide the answer or the advice or whatever it might be, but to create a linguistic environment in which people can respond, make inner changes unconsciously.
Mm. I'm wondering if you would be able to tease out maybe a concrete, you know, specific example for those that are not familiar at all, you know, with these techniques.
Yes. Well, if someone has a particular, for example, in the book, this woman has a very specific fear of spiders.
Mm-hmm.
So a very direct suggestion and that's more or less how direct hypnosis works, would be your fear of spiders will decrease and will disappear, or you will no longer be afraid of spiders. That would be a very specific instruction for the unconscious mind to let it go.
Yeah.
Which is very different from, for example, saying, I wonder what will happen as you're sitting here automatically and unconsciously, and then observing how the unconscious responds in terms of body language and building on that, and therefore and thereby allowing or motivating the unconscious mind to start a change or healing process from within, which by definition matches the client's personality and the thinking style and needs.
Yeah, I always found it fascinating that when working with direct styles, which certainly, I mean, as Ernie Rossi, I was listening to one of his speeches in 1985, was saying, sure, you can use direct works or suggestive works, and it works some of the time.
Yes.
But it's more a reflection of the client complying with you than it is finding a compliance with themselves.
Right.
And it's surprising when someone makes a direct session, you know, you will, next time you see a spider, whatever they do to make the situation, and it will feel less and so on and so forth. Or perhaps some of the NLP things where they change the perspective, where you sort of say, and you pull away from the spider and it becomes very small and you change right. the associations. But I always say, where do you think we got the ideas from? Where do you think we got these ideas from? And my answer is always, we got the ideas from what people did anyway. This is what right. people did naturally.
Yes.
And I can, and you can see as you read through all the places where Stephen could very easily have just gone, oh, think like this. And it's extremely likely that the client would have done that for yes. a short period of time.
Yes.
But he yes. avoids that temptation and allows the client to find it.
Right.
Right. Richard, if I could just jump in here with some of my own language, and this sounds like introducing the client to the plane of possibility. Would I be correct in using that sort of terminology?
Well, it takes them back. And Josh, this is what I talk about a lot is the now as I'm trying to understand these frameworks is looking at this, we move away from our probabilities. We move away from those things that we've become used to thinking
yes.
and go back to the basis. And in fact, not even go back to the basis, but move forward into another frame of thinking. And I think this is what I find you getting to here. By it's not so much that you're obscure or obtuse or abstract, but that's what possibility is.
Mm.
Yeah.
And how do you find this? I imagine you train people in this fashion yourself. I know yeah. Stephen does these things. How do you find people, other practitioners and things, respond to this invitation to, as Ernie Rossi says, step out of the way and
yes.
you know, what is it difficult for people to grasp?
Well, sometimes. What I encounter a lot in my trainings workshops is that people are confused at first. I remember a psychologist doing my training, and he said, I'm so used to analyzing someone's problem and then giving a kind of advice or a kind of interpretation.
Mm-hmm.
It's very difficult not to do that. And at the same time, that was what it was all about not doing that and leaving it open and just creating a linguistic and physical environment for the person to change. So a lot of confusion at first, a lot of enthusiasm as well, and people being very surprised about how quickly things can change once they make that step to opening up this, as you call it, field of possibility. So it's for me, it's fascinating to do that, to having all these colleagues from all different fields and approaches. Some of them are closer to what I do. Some of them are far away from that in terms of more cognitive approaches, discovering this.
So it's almost like they've got to rebel against their training. It's like someone who's been told to walk sideways and been told to walk, you know, differently.
Yes, at first it is. Oftentimes it is. Even hypnotherapists who haven't been trained in the Ericksonian style, for them it's a world opening up. I've had people in my trainings who have been working for 20 years as a hypnotherapist, and still they say, well, this is completely new and this is amazing.
Yeah. Yes, I must admit, when I do trainings with mirroring hands, I spend half my time walking around the room saying, you know, shush, no, shh, just shh.
Right.
Give the client a moment to figure it out for themselves.
Yeah.
What do you have in the this is the first, I mean, it's very tantalizingly titled Volume 1.
Yes.
Now, that encourages me to think that, you know, what are you thinking?
I programmed myself to write Volume 2, but in that way.
Yeah. So do you have a plan for the number of volumes or are we going, I think this book is something that would take you, a person who's inexperienced with this, if they spent 6 months with this book, just going back into it every now and again, working with it, going back into it, that would be really good. So, okay. So I'd love to see Volume 2. Is this something that's in the works or planning? What are you doing?
Yes, absolutely it is. I've started Volume 2.
Oh, you have? Well, that's what you said a second ago, and I wasn't listening. I'm sorry.
That's all right. I started Volume 2. I'm going to write at least 3 volumes. So Volume 2 will be published somewhere in the course of next year, hopefully summer, maybe autumn. And probably the year after that, I'm planning 1 book a year. Right now, I'll definitely write 3, and then we'll take stock and see what happens.
Well, what I want to see is I've just actually finished reviewing the collected works of Milton Erickson that Ernest Rossi and Catherine Rossi and Roxana Erickson Klein edited, and I did 1 volume. For each edition of the newsletter, of the Erickson newsletters, 3 newsletters a year. So it took me 5 years because, Joss, it's 16 volumes. So off you go.
Yeah.
One down.
One down.
But that's wonderful. I'm so pleased. And how is this affecting Stephen's work?
Well, he was very happy that someone decided to do this because he never got to the point to writing a book himself. I don't know if he ever will, but he was very pleased that someone would sit down and analyze his work, and in his words, doing it well. Because obviously, as he said, several people have made attempts to describe his work but didn't get anywhere. According to him, I'm the first person to really managed to really capture what he's doing. I was very pleased to hear that, obviously.
Yeah, it's actually a bit daunting. I can appreciate, because Ernie said the same thing to me. Actually, on the promotional video, he said, you know, this is the best interpretation of my work that's been done. And you sort of get a bit daunted. But Matt, when you're sort of looking at something like Joss is doing, this detailed analysis of a case, is how does that excite you, or what's the effect it has on you? Because I know sometimes, I mean, I actually read a lot of cases, and quite often I think, wow, this could be summarized in about 3 or 4 paragraphs, because mostly they just tell them all what to do. How does this this appeal?
It's very appealing because there are so many subtleties and there's so much to draw out of, you know, like we always say, you know, we're very complex systems, and put two complex systems together in a room and you've got an enormous amount of complexity. And so to analyze, you know, what is actually happening in the room, what's happening with the individuals, it's absolutely fascinating. And obviously I'm trying to frame all of, you know, what you're talking about into, you know, my own experience and my own language. I don't come from the hypnotherapy world, and so I come from a different angle, but I'm able to interpret a lot of what goes on. And it just really, really enriches my own practice. So I would encourage people, even if you're not, you know, practicing hypnotherapy or you haven't had an interest in hypnotherapy in the past, that this sort of material is still really, really interesting and can really add value to your own practice.
Yeah, and I just want to add it. Just we've moved off. We're quizzing Matthew because Matthew is a very, very skillful musician, and he's studied and is able to do scores, and so he's discussed that. Now I imagine, Matt, that you could get a 20-minute score, and you could write a book on all the intricacies and the complexities and bring out both its technicality, but also its beauty. And I think this is very much what I think you've done, Joss.
Mm. Yes. And actually, I love doing that. I'm a very passionate and dedicated therapist and trainer. I love doing that. That's what I chose to do. But I'm still the analytical guy that I was when I studied physics. The only difference is I'm doing it with language and body language now and communication. So I love to sit down and really study what is going on here, what is happening here minute by minute, second by second. What are the choices? What is the implication of what's being said here? What is the response? How does this fit in the larger scale of the session? So that's hopefully comes out in the book.
Oh, it definitely does. Yeah.
Sitting down and analyzing something.
Very much reminds me of Bruce Ecker. He, you know, he comes from that science background as well, pays enormous attention to detail as he's writing about these interpersonal interactions in the therapy room.
Mm. Mm, but it still maintains its very humanistic sense of things. Now, the good thing, I suppose, in my concern about talking about Erickson and now Rossi, who's passed away, Stephen's fighting fit and bouncing around. Now, we've got several places that people can go to look into this stuff. As I say, we've got your links to your work over there in Europe, you know, in the Netherlands, which is fantastic. But then Stephen's also conducting a number of courses and they're available in various ways. What sort of stuff is he doing?
Well, he's still teaching Ericksonian hypnotherapy. Actually, currently he's doing it. He's offering an online teaching course because of all the COVID problems that are there. So he's teaching Ericksonian hypnotherapy and non-attachment therapy, psychotherapy based on Buddhist principles. Obviously, he combines the two, but he's given two separate courses in that. I'm giving courses in Ericksonian hypnotherapy, which have a lot to do with language patterns and also with the mirroring hands as well, because I've studied your work, obviously, and Rossi's work. Very much a fan of that.
We're plugging away here, but no, it is beautiful. I mean, I know I sometimes, you know, respond a little bit uncomfortably to the fact that I'm so important in the frame. I mean, Ernie just sort of embraced me, made me struggle for 15 years, and then said, "Now it's yours." You know, which was great. Now I guess you're online as well.
Well, no, I give live courses. I don't offer online courses, at least not yet. I'm waiting what will happen in terms of COVID. I hope to do regular online courses again next year. I did some this year, but on a limited basis. So I continue that.
Oh, fantastic. Okay. You know, yeah. I mean, Europe's such a... I'm love going over there and doing things, because you go on an aeroplane for an hour or a car for a couple of hours and you're in another country. And it's absolutely fabulous experience. And if it weren't for all the different languages, which is beautiful that there are, and it's my fault because I only speak this one annoying language, English, But see, there you are. And just as a question, I mean, you obviously speak Dutch and you speak English. How many languages are you able to manage?
Three, fluently, a bit of French. But I couldn't teach in French.
Three and a bit. And you say that with sort of like, oh, not many. And that's amazing. That's amazing. Yes. So everybody out there can only speak one language, you know, sit back.
Okay, before we wrap up, Joss, is there anything you'd like to leave our listeners with?
Indirect communication, Erickson's work, Stephen Brooks's approach in that field has made a major difference in my life, both as a person and a therapist and a trainer. And I wish for everybody to get a little bit of that. Or a lot.
I love it. Not just a practical professional thing, but a life enriching thing. That's beautiful. And mm-hmm. and I absolutely agree with you. And send you warm hugs from one student of master to another.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you very much.
Joss, it's been wonderful having you on the show. Thanks for joining us here, and I hope we can catch up again sometime soon.
Yeah, I hope so too. It's very nice being with you.
Lovely.
Thank you very much.
Bye for now.
Bye-bye.
Oh, Matt, that was almost a bit spooky. I've known Joss, through internet and through various conversations for a while, but there's lots of parallels and comparisons and similar thinkings and then he turns around and he says he really likes mirroring hands as well, so I like him, you know. No, but it was really lovely to hear the talk, but I do understand how people go, yeah, but what do you mean? Well, that's why I wrote the book.
Right.
Get the book and you will begin to understand this framing. Otherwise, you've got to buy the 16 volumes of Milton Erickson, and this will take you there a lot quicker.
Yeah. And, I know for myself, listening to you and talking about Erickson and all your work with Mirroring Hands, I've learned a lot for things that I can apply in my own style of therapy. So I encourage everyone out there, even if hypnosis and hypnotherapy is not your thing, you're still going to learn a lot. So jump on the show notes and you'll find a link to Joss and to the book and all the information that you'll need. Well, Richard, thanks again. It's been wonderful.
That's it. We've done another beaut one. It's a lot of fun always, and great to see you, and it was great to see Joss. So we need to now go off into the sweet dark night. And hopefully everybody else after listening to this has a wonderful, wonderful day, wonderful evening, whatever it is.
Okay. You can go off into the sweet dark night. I'm going to go have dinner.
Okay.
Thanks, everyone, for joining us here on the Science of Psychotherapy podcast, and we'll catch you next time.
Bye for now.
Thanks for listening to the Science of Psychotherapy podcast. For more great science, go to thescienceofpsychotherapy.com.